involving a tax issue. And you'll note that we're sitting five, and Justices Wilcox and Prasa will not be participating. And the case is 00-3252, Ray Mallow versus Wisconsin Department of Revenue. Arguing for the Mallows is James Bartson. And arguing on behalf of the Department of Revenue is Mr. Hildebrand for 20 minutes, and Spear D. Rowing will be arguing for the Wisconsin Farm Bureau for 10 minutes, right? And then you will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is James Bartson, and I represent Ray and Wanda Mallow. The issue in this appeal is simple. Does an administrative rule, Tax 1808, promulgated in 2000 by the Department of Revenue, is it invalid because it conflicts with its enabling statute, Section 7032-2R, the use value statute? We submit that the rule is in conflict with the statute and therefore is invalid. We respectfully submit that the construction of the statute proffered by the Department in support of its rule is untenable and inconsistent with the plain language of the statute. In the decision being reviewed by this court, the Circuit Court restated the Department's contention that the statute provides for a 2-year freeze and a 10-year phase-in of transition to use value, but also includes an option to implement use value assessments based on the recommendation of the legislatively created Farmland Advisory Council and the promulgation of rules. So that's the crux of this case. We respectfully submit that the statute cannot be construed to allow the Department to enact a rule that truncates the phase-in of the transition from fair market to use value. There is no such option. The plain language of the statute does not provide the option.
Where does it mandate that this be completed in over the course of 10 years as opposed to sometime within the next 10 years?
It's the language.
Are you relying on?
I am relying on subsection B that states for each year beginning with 1998 or upon completion of the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation and promulgation of rules and ending no later than December 31, 2008, the assessed value of the parcel shall be reduced as follows.
I look at the words ending no later, and with all respect, counsel, that doesn't tell me that it can't end earlier than that.
In fact, Your Honor, you're correct. It can and does, and under the statutory scheme and the rules promulgated by the Department, it actually ends 2 years earlier. Let me explain. The statute first provides for a freeze for 2 years, then the beginning of a phase-in. Now, that phase-in cannot begin automatically. It needed, as Mr. Peterson argued this morning, pointed out quite correctly, for the phase-in to start, the Department had to promulgate a rule. And it's not a simple rule to promulgate. It was a very complicated, detailed rule, not 1808, but 1807, that told assessors how to value farmland according to the income that is or could be generated from agricultural use. That's not something they would just know out on their own. The Department needed to promulgate a rule to launch the phase-in. It did that in 1997, and the phase-in started. So actually, in 2007, the assessed value would equal the use value. So it ends 2 years earlier than 2009. But that is quite consistent with the statute. The statute doesn't say it has to go 10 years. It says it shall be reduced as follows, and then you follow out the formula. So I think it's very consistent with the plain language of the statute. I just don't see an option in there to truncate. The Department promulgated a rule in 1997 that launched the phase-in in 1998, and we had phase-in in 1998 and 1999. And there is an absence of authority to come in and then say, oh, the rest is over.
Mr. Bartson, how do you read the language, or upon the completion of the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation? Isn't that significant language also?
Yes, but I think you have to read it as a whole. Or upon the completion of the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation and the promulgation of rules. And the reason that's a very important point. Why is that phrase in there? Because, as I said, you can't just automatically fire up the phase-in in 1998. Why didn't the legislature just say, starting in 1998, we're going to go to use value? Because they didn't know and had to account for the possibility that the department would not promulgate the rule in time. So they said begin in 1998 or when they get the rule done.
Well, didn't the council make a recommendation here for an end to the phase-in period and immediate starting of use value assessment?
Right, and
that was after they had promulgated rules, right?
Right, and after the recommendation, because if you read the statute under subsection B, phase-in starts upon the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation. It says, for each year beginning with 1998 or upon completion of the recommendation, promulgation of rules.
Well, let me ask it another way. Didn't they make a recommendation? Didn't they promulgate rules? And then didn't they make a further recommendation for an immediate phase-in?
Yes.
And what prohibits them from doing that?
Because the phase-in started, because they made a recommendation, rules followed, the phase-in started, and what prohibits them is the words, shall be reduced as follows. Not shall be reduced as follows, subject to further recommendations. What prohibits them is the absence of authority. And maybe I should point out a problem I see with the department's position here. In rulemaking cases, the court asks, what is your enabling statute? And if the enabling statute is not clear, the issue is decided against rulemaking authority. Yes.
Do you have children?
Yes.
I'll bet you, like me, frequently would tell them, you've got to be home no later than 10:30.
My children are 5 and 7, so...
Well, I used to have to tell her 10:30, no later than 10:30.
I better correct the record.
If she came home at 9, was she violating my...
Of course not, no. Or you have to be in bed by 8, it's really what I say.
Well, this to me seems precisely the same thing, that
sure.
Ending no later is the same as me telling my daughter, look, you can go out, and you can come back in anytime you want, but no later than 10:30. And here, it seems to me, the legislature is saying you can do this anytime you want, but you can't do it beyond December 31st of 2008. This just seems like a plain, common sense reading of that statute to me.
That the department can promulgate a rule to go immediately to use value?
Yeah.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
Just as my daughter can come in at 9 o'clock, even when I tell her she can't be home any later than 10:30.
I really do disagree with that for this reason. The statute says, for each year beginning with 1998 or upon completion of recommendation and rules. Now, we know as a historical fact that it started in 1998.
Right.
Okay. And ending no later than December 31, 2008,
what
shall be reduced as follows. It doesn't say you may then enact a rule to shorten it. It says it shall be reduced as follows for each year until it's done. Is exactly what it says. It doesn't say get the rule done to go to straight use value by and no later than 2008, no later than December 31, 2008.
Well, let's try and turn the sentence around. The assessed value of the parcel shall be reduced as follows. For each year beginning with 1998, or upon completion of the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation and promulgation of rules and ending no later than December 31, 2008. That's the way you want it read?
Yes.
Well, it should be read that way, but doesn't make any sense. When do we start? The freeze ends in 1997?
Right.
Okay.
But
go ahead.
Provided the rules were promulgated.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. If the rules aren't promulgated timely, the freeze continues?
Yes.
Okay. Where does it say that in the statute?
In subsection A.
Okay. So, it says there shall be a freeze. Until 1998, or upon completion of the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation and promulgation of rules, right?
Right.
And that freeze will continue until December 31, 2008, unless they, I don't mean freeze, but the assessed value, unless they do something, is that it?
No.
Okay, what is
you
it?
You also have to read sub C.
Okay.
This is a three-part process. Under sub A, there is a freeze. The freeze lasts 1996 and 1997.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, we've got to look at this from the date that the legislature enacted the rule. You can't end the freeze and start the phase until the rule gets done, until that determined by rule that is talked about is done. So the freeze, 1997, 1998. Assume, as was the historical fact, that the department got the rule done in time. The phase-in starts in 1998, as it did. It plays itself out. It goes through the 10-year phase-in before the deadline established by the statute, before December 31, 2008. In fact, you're at 100% use value assessment in 2007. Then sub C comes in and says, for assessments in January 1 after the valuation method under Part B no longer applies. In other words, after you're done with playing out the phase-in formula, then it's use value. Then it's 100% use value. Now, let me add one other point as to why this deadline is in the statute.
What deadline?
The deadline for each year ending no later than December 31, 1998. What about agricultural land that comes into service in the year 2006? You don't run through a 10-year formula. On January 1 of 2009, it's full use value. Swampland drained and turned into a cranberry bog in the year 2005. You don't run through that 10-year formula. You go through 3 years of it, and then to pure use value assessment.
We're looking for the legislative intent. That's the ultimate goal.
Yes.
Clearly, the ultimate goal of the legislature was to enact use value, to have use value throughout the state. Why would they mandate a 10-year delay for implementing what it is they want? It seems to me that you would put this in, that the legislature would put this in only because they recognize that there could be some problems in the implementation, and so they're giving them time to do it. But if it seems to me that the legislature, if they didn't anticipate any problems, would be very happy to see land use to see this completed by the year 2000.
Again, I respectfully disagree in this sense. This is a tax act, and this is balancing one sector of the economy against everybody else. And it had impacts on municipalities, impacts on other taxpayers. And I think the legislative intent of the phase-in was to ameliorate those impacts by bringing them in gradually, bringing them online gradually. I believe that is the reason for the phase-in, that this be done gradually so that municipalities don't get hit with a sudden loss in tax base totaling $40 million all at once.
Is that what actually happened?
In the record, there are numbers ranging from 38 to in the 40s of the effect of going from the phase-in to the pure use value in the year 2000. So I couldn't give you an exact number, but that's, I think, a reasonable
estimate. That would be a loss.
Pardon me?
That's a loss in taxes.
It's a reduction in tax base, which has to be made up either through higher taxes on other sectors or reductions in spending.
Council, you're probably going to have to continue, not continue, you're probably going to have to give me again some of this language, because I'm having difficulty understanding it. Let me see if I capture. I think what we have here is a situation where the legislature just didn't know when the formula would be set.
Yes.
The legislature didn't know when this, whatever the committee is, this Farm Advisory Council was going to come up with its formula.
Certainly, and the promulgation of rules. The really important thing is the promulgation of rules. They did not know. Okay.
And you need the rules, and you need the formula that can implement the rules. Is
yes.
that right? So, because they didn't know, they kept on having to put in both A and in B this kind of equivocal language, or until they come up with these rules, because we don't know when it's going to be.
Right.
Okay. So, A says the freeze is going to be 2 years, right?
Yes.
But it could be longer.
Right.
And and because we don't know when they're going to come up with these rules
and if you
or their recommendations.
That's right. And if you want to add some more ambiguity at that point in time.
I have enough ambiguity.
It could be shorter.
Pardon?
It could be shorter.
It's
the Farmland Advisory Council got its recommendation done in 1996.
Okay.
It could be shorter.
So, and I understand that. So, it could be these 2 years, or because we don't know when these people are going to do this, or whenever that happens. Okay, that's the freeze. That's the length of the freeze, and that's taken care of in sub A.
Yes.
Now, we still don't know when they're going to come up with, when I enact this legislation here, I still don't know when they're going to come up with this recommendation or rule. So what do I say in sub B? I say in sub B, assuming the freeze is only 2 years, for each year beginning with 1998, that's kind of assuming that it's only 2 years, and that tracks off A. For each year beginning with 1998, or whenever this recommendation stuff comes in, but in no event, and ending no later in December 31st, 2008, the assessed value of the parcels shall be reduced as follows. So, B says, during this period of time, there shall be a phase-in. Is that right?
Yes. That is correct.
And then C says that C says what?
For assessments as of the January 1, after the valuation under Part B no longer applies.
Then you just use use value.
It's use value.
Yeah,
yes.
So you don't have this phase in. It's
suppose they don't have any rules by December 31, 2008.
I don't know what would have happened, honestly. And as the court, I'm sure, is aware, the legislature is struggling in other contexts with administrative agencies that don't write rules. Hypothetically, I don't know, because I don't know how an assessor would measure the use value according to the income that was or could be generated as determined by rule, if there's no rule. But, Your Honor, that didn't happen. That's,
I understand
that. The court construes statutes according to the facts and circumstances present before it, and the rule is there.
But theoretically, under the statute, to follow up on the Chief's question, we could have had a 10-year freeze followed by immediate implementation of full use value assessment.
Yes. Yes. If the department had not promulgated the rule until 2005, I guess, to be effective 2006, you would have had a 10-year freeze and immediate.
So if the department can eliminate the phase-in by inaction, why can't it eliminate the phase-in by affirmative action? Passing a rule that just gets rid of it.
Because it lacks the authority to pass a rule that conflicts with a statute, whereas other than through a mandamus action, I don't know that the statute forces it to enact a rule.
Well, you just, it seems to me, conceded that the department could, by neglecting to act, eliminate the phase-in.
Yes, absolutely.
Period, and there would be nothing wrong with that under the statute. So
it would survive the statute because the statute doesn't force a rule. That's true.
But the statute forces a phase-in or phase-out, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yes.
So if they don't pass a rule, you have the statutory phase-out.
No. I'm sorry. Maybe I misunderstood. If they didn't pass a rule, mm-hmm. you would have no phase-in, phase-out at all.
You just have the freeze.
We have the freeze.
Okay.
Because the important thing is sub 1. The assessor is going to subtract the value of the parcel as determined according to the income that is or could be generated from its rental for agricultural use as determined by rule. So the phasing can't start until the rule starts. Until the rule starts. Now, to go back to Justice, Your Honor's question, though, could the department sit on its hands? Yes, I suppose so. And could it sit on its hands long enough that there would never be a phase-in? Yes, I suppose so. And I suppose the department could have sat on its hands long enough that we'd be back in this court saying, make them do a rule or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, it didn't happen. Going back to this for each year beginning with 1998, I think it is important to remember that the phase-in did start in 1998. And once started, where is the authority to stop it? And authority for administrative agencies is not implied. Statutes, when you're looking for the authority on an enabling statute, you do a constrictive rather than an expansive construction.
Mr. Bartson, what's the standard of review that the court should be applying in this case?
I believe the standard of review is de novo without deference to the department's construction. In the CIDR case, I believe that answered it by saying a 227-40 challenge, a declaratory judgment challenge to an administrative rule as to whether or not it complies with the statute, the court applies a de novo standard of review. It does, the decision does say that the court draws on the expertise of a particular agency and that it might defer in appropriate cases.
Does that sound like due weight deference?
It sounds like it, but I don't believe that due weight deference is appropriate in this case because I don't believe that this statute is one that calls for the application of expertise of the Department of Revenue. This is not a tax statute. This is a timing statute. We could be talking about wetland regulation or campaign finance reform being phased in any more than a tax statute. And to follow up on that point, if you compare 1808, which is essentially a timing statute, with 1807, which is the use value statute, I think you get the flavor of when a court should defer to an administrative agency. 1807 is a very complicated, detailed, technical rule, bringing in things like capitalization rates and soil productivity indices. If I were here challenging that rule, I would well expect the court to say, we will defer to the agency's expertise here. But in the construction of a timing statute, I don't believe that there is an appropriate deference here. I don't think you'd give due weight deference. Another point on ambiguity. We're talking about an administrative agency's power to enact a rule. When the statute's ambiguous, I believe the appropriate construction is constriction rather than expansion, that an enabling statute must clearly grant the authority to make a rule, and you don't find it by implication.
Are you taking the position that this statute is ambiguous or that it's clear on its face?
My position is after the department enacted the rules to implement use value in 1997, this statute is clear on its face for these circumstances. We could go back to 1995, and I could give you 20. I'll give you one, but I'll give you 20 ambiguities that were uncertainties, when to get the rule done, that sort of thing, that were taken away when the department promulgated the rules to implement in 1997. No, I don't believe it's ambiguous.
Is it your position, then, that the part of the rule that determines what would happen under sub 1 stays in effect? It's just that you cannot have an immediate effect of this rule? In other words, this rule shortcuts this transition,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what happens? Do you have enough left in the rule other than the transition, the shortcutting of the transition, to make this work?
Sure. You mean what happens if the new rule is declared invalid?
Yeah.
There are still, I guess it's 2007, so there's still 5 years left to the phase-in, or 4 years where there would be some reduction.
So the phasing will be in effect?
Yes.
There's no more freeze.
Pardon me?
There is no more freeze.
The freeze is done, and the freeze has been done since 1998. The freeze is over, it would not go back to a freeze. I believe it would go back to the phase-in, because there was a rule, the old 1808, 1997's 1808, that exactly tracked the statute. And the new rule, the rule that we are challenging, merely substituted language saying we go immediately to use value. That's a paraphrase, not a quote.
And that was after the Federal Farmland Advisory Council made a recommendation?
The Farmland Advisory Council made a recommendation in 1999 to go directly to use value. I respectfully submit they had no authority to do that. They were no more, I mean, it's an advisory board. There is no weight to that recommendation. The recommendation that I believe that statute talks about is the recommendation that Mr. Peterson talked about this morning, the complex series of calculations and analysis necessary to get to tax 1807 in 1997. And that's what they did. There is still a function of the Farmland Advisory Council. The department and the council together publish a number every year. The use value doesn't stay the same. It changes every year. And it's done on a township-by-township basis.
You want to go back to the 1997 rule?
Yes. I believe the 1997 rule appropriately implemented the statute, and the 2000 rule did not. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Bartson. Mr. Hildebrand?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I heard my opponent here make a rather interesting observation, and that is that when the department adopted rules in 1997, that cured all of the pre-existing ambiguities in the statute. That is a unique view of the law, I might say, and I don't know of any authority for it. But what I would suggest the proper thing to do in a case like this is to go back to the time when the legislature passed this statute and see what was intended. As everybody agrees that if the department did something that was beyond the intention of the legislature, that it can't stand. And as one or more of the justices have said, the legislature didn't know when they passed this law what the Farmland Advisory Council would advise or what rules would be promulgated. So let's look at the statute and see what would have happened if nothing were done at the administrative level or at the Farmland Advisory level. First of all, under subsection A, we would have had a two-year freeze. And under subsection B, then after that two-year freeze, we would have had a 10-year phase-in. The statute is very clear. If nothing is done, those two things happen. And then under subsection C...
How can have a phase-in if it's...
Pardon me, Your Honor.
How can you have a phase-in if under sub 1 you need a rule? And you're going on the supposition that nothing has been done.
That's right. But under subsection A, there's no reference to the rules as being a trigger for the phase-in, for the freeze, I'm sorry.
Okay, and then under
under subsection B, there is no requirement in the statute that there be rules to start the phase-in. And that's this assumption that this freeze could last 10 years, we totally disagree with, because we think there's a mandatory phase-in starting in 1998 under subsection B.
Tell me what the third line under 1 means. It says, subtract the value of the parcel as determined according to the income that is or could be generated from its rental agricultural use, comma, as determined by rule, comma.
Well, that gets back to the rules.
Yeah, but you don't have any rules.
Just let me finish.
I will count.
I apologize for not citing this in my brief, but there is a part of the enabling statute that is not the enabling act that is not incorporated in the statute that tells the Department of Revenue to make rules about how do you assess agricultural land. So the rules that were adopted in 1997 are not necessarily responsive to the promulgation of rules that are referred to in subsection B, but rather were required by the enabling statute. And if you would look at 1995 Wisconsin Act 27 at section 9148, that tells the department to make rules about including guidelines to be used by assessors and classifying land as agricultural land, etc. So it would be presumed, of course, that the department would follow the direction of the legislature in that section of the Enabling Act and adopt these rules.
Counsel, I haven't heard this part before, but as I understood it, 1807 is the formula are the rules that set forth the formula that's referenced in 2RB.
That's correct. And the reason for that is, Your Honor, is that it had to be that formula before the Farmland Advisory Council made its recommendation. The Department of Revenue had no right to truncate the phase-in until the Advisory Council made its recommendation, and that didn't occur until 1999. So obviously the default provisions of the statute would have to, and that's what the department did. It just...
I'm sorry, I need to slow down a little bit. So let me, maybe it's easier for me if I ask questions and can... It seems to me 2A deals with the freeze. 2B then gives the formula for the phase-in. But as I read 2B1, the formula is dependent upon the enactment of rules in order to define these terms. And so phase-in set forth in B cannot be commenced until you have the rules that define the formula. That's the way I see this now.
Well, that's essentially correct, but the rules were those that were adopted in 1997 that would tell real estate assessors how to assess the land. And to say that ties the hands of the department when 2 years later the Farmland Advisory Council makes a recommendation, and therefore the fact that they adopted rules in 1997 cuts off the opportunity to make further rules upon statutory events occurring is simply, I don't believe, a permissible reading of this statute. Now, what I'm trying to say is that the reason that we have these or clauses in A and B is to give the department and the Farmland Advisory Council flexibility as to when to kick in full use valuation. Otherwise, if the legislature had intended a mandatory 10-year phase-in, there'd be no need for these ORs in the statute.
Let me ask, if I may. You're saying that the ORs, that is the OR until they come up, or until the Advisory Council, you're saying the reason that they're there is to give flexibility. It seemed to me that the reason they were there is because when this statute was enacted, the legislature had no idea when the Advisory Council would get around to setting the formula. And therefore, they had to give that kind of equivocating
That may be one view of it. But I think that you have to draw a distinction between rules that would be the standard operating procedure type rules as to how do you assess, which was done in 1997, and rules calling for the implementation of the phase-in. Now, nobody today yet has mentioned 7303-49A, which is the statute that sets up the Farmland Advisory Council. That statute requires the Advisory Council to advise the department, and I'm quoting, on rules to implement use value assessment for agricultural land, close quote. Now, here we have the legislature saying
Council,
this...
where are you quoting from? Which one?
7303-49A.
A, okay, thank you.
It says...
I just didn't know which one you were doing. I have.
Now, if the legislature is telling the Farmland Advisory Council to advise the department on implementing on rules to implement the phase-in, and then if the statute says that is what the Farmland Advisory Council is supposed to do, is to make a recommendation, and then the department is supposed to promulgate rules, and then the statute also says in several instances that things have to be done no later than... And there's nothing in there that says that it can't be done earlier than. I think that a conclusive reading of these statutes is that the department acted properly.
Where in that section 49, what language would you point to as relying on the authority of the council to make a recommendation regarding acceleration? What language are you relying on for
In
the council having that authority?
In A. Advise the Department of Revenue.
I'm sorry, I just didn't hear that.
in subsection A,
in A, okay,
advise the Department of Revenue on the supplement to the assessor's assessment manual's guidelines for assessing agricultural land, which I'm not talking about that, okay, and on rules to implement use value assessment of agricultural land and to reduce expansion of urban sprawl.
Okay, so just so if the words, and it's really the latter part of that you're relying on.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if the words, council, you have authority to make recommendations on rules, here's the language, to implement use value assessment of agricultural land and to reduce expansion of urban sprawl. If those words can be interpreted to mean you have the authority to accelerate the phase-in, then maybe you're home free. I'm just saying. If they do not, then you lose.
I'll tell you why I think I'm home free. Because if the 10-year phase-in were mandatory, there'd be no need for or upon completion of the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation and the promulgation of rules. There'd be absolutely no need for it.
Let me, if I may, tell you where I'm going so that, and that is a council can only do what it has been given authority to do. You know, and it can't do anything more, obviously.
Well, you know, I'm not arguing that.
Yeah, that's right. And so I look to this 49 to see where it has authority to accelerate the phase-in. And that's why I say,
right,
if it has authority, and if those words can be interpreted as giving it authority, maybe you're home free. If it doesn't, then maybe you can't get the first base.
All right. The Farmland Advisory Council does not have the authority to adopt rules. It has the authority to advise the department. And the department can adopt rules upon receipt of certain recommendations. That's what the statute says. The Farmland Advisory Council on its own can't go out and adopt rules.
Okay,
so here we have the statute, the Farmland Advisory Council statute saying, council advise the department on preventing urban sprawl and implementing use value value assessment of farms. And then you go to the statute and you see this kind of language that says that ending no later than and upon completion of the recommendation and the promulgation of rules, and then you go to C and you see that it provides that it can be done earlier, I think the conclusion is inescapable that the department could do this.
You left me behind. So, and that is, your point is well taken, that the advisory council does not have authority to implement rules, obviously. But I look to 49 just to see, because in 49 it circumscribes the authority of the ability to make recommendations. Anything that the advisory council can do is set forth in 49, because it's created, it's its functions, its existence is defined by 49. And it is that language that you referred to in sub A that you interpret as giving the advisory council authority to make recommendations of acceleration. Is that correct?
Yes, but I also rely on subsection 2B of the statute, because it refers to advisory council's recommendation.
But my question, and maybe your answer is responsive, I'm just not following it, that's why I'm asking
again.
My question is this. What words give the advisory council authority to make a recommendation to accelerate the phase-in? You pointed to the language in 49A, and now you're pointing, what language are you pointing to that gives the advisory council specific, you know, they don't have authority to do anything. It's delineated. They can, and it's all delineated in 49. on what they have to do and how they have to calculate the federal land bank's five-year average capitalization rate and per acre value based on the estimated income.
Right.
I mean, they can only do certain things.
What you're asking me is there a specific thing in the statute that says Farmland Advisory Council, you can or cannot recommend acceleration of use value? There's nothing more specific than I've read you. Here's what we know. We know just a minute. We know.
But I want to know why you interpret that language that you're pointing to that doesn't expressly say it, why you're interpreting it to say it.
Because 49A says that the council can advise rules to implement use value assessment of agricultural land and to reduce expansion of urban sprawl. That's a very broad directive, and it could only and it's much broader than giving us about the technicalities of how things are assessed. Then when we go to the statute, we see the words like no later than, we see subsection C that contemplates full use valuation before the end of the 10-year period. I think that it's inescapable that the legislature wanted to implement full use value as soon as this body of experts could make their recommendations and as soon as the department could promulgate rules to guide the thing through so it could be done right. There are tremendous public policy issues involved in this statute, and that's why the legislature passed it. And it's inconceivable, to me anyway, that the legislature would have said that this 10-year phase-in is mandatory, so we'll take a 10-year solution to the problem instead of what we now have is a 5 or 6 year solution.
How easy would it have been for the legislature to have established a fixed start date full use value?
It could have been easily done, and that's why these are default provisions.
If the legislature had explicitly intended to implement full use value assessment on December 31st, 2008, it could have said full
exactly.
Use value assessment shall take effect December 31st.
Right. And it would not have done what it did in C, and it would not have had these OR clauses in B.
And what you're referring to in C is the subsection of the statute that discusses full use value assessment, and it doesn't refer to a fixed date. It refers to the time period when the assessment method provided in subsection B no longer applies.
That's correct.
Either the default one that's specified in the statute or the one that the department specifies.
That's right. In conclusion, Your Honors, I would respectfully submit that the Department of Revenue did its job and it did what it was supposed to do. And it did not ignore the statute. In fact, it followed the statute to the best of its ability.
I have a question for you. What's a de novo review? How's it compared to due weight?
Well, I think the department's interpretation should be given due weight, as I argued in the brief.
What does due weight mean?
Due weight means that you give stronger consideration to what the department did than you would otherwise do.
Okay.
But I really think that that this statute should be read, and the job of the court, as I perceive it, is to interpret the statute, and the case flows from there. I think the statute is very clear that the 10-year phase-in is not mandatory, and that's all they're complaining about. So,
if your position is that the department's interpretation, if it's more reasonable than give that weight, more reasonable than what? Any other interpretation?
That would be the case. It certainly is. Position of our opponents that says that the 10-year phase-in is mandatory, and if it were, you wouldn't have a statute that's structured this way.
Isn't that stating the burden of proof backwards? It's not if the department's interpretation is more reasonable. My understanding of due weight deference is that if the department's interpretation is reasonable and the countervailing interpretation is also reasonable, the department's interpretation wins. In other words, a tie goes to the department.
That's correct.
And only if the countervailing interpretation is more reasonable does the department lose.
That's my understanding of the doctrine, Your Honor. Thank you.
What does great weight mean, then?
Department always wins?
Well, you know, I'm usually up here fighting administrative agencies, but anyway.
Do you want to switch positions?
No, I don't think I've ever done that. At least I've tried not to. But in any event, I think the primary focus here is what does this statute mean? And I'm not going to come up here and try to persuade the court that our reading of the statute is not only reasonable but clearly correct, and that's our position.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Ruang?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Sver Ruang, and it is my honor today to appear on behalf of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and the other intervening defendants in this matter. It's the same intervening defendants that Mr. Peterson named this morning.
You don't have to name them.
You're welcome.
You have less time than he did.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd like to hear it again.
Both counsels have been up here, have stated this absolutely correctly. What this case is about is legislative intent, and what does 7032-2R mean, and does the Department of Revenue have the authority to do what it did when it implemented the use value rule? The intervening defendants wholeheartedly support the department's interpretation. We believe that is the clear and reasonable approach. What I'd like to do is focus on the Farmland Advisory Council, because I believe that really tips the scales in this case. Now, when I start with the Farmland Advisory Council, I actually want to start with another statute, 227.11.2A. Mr. Bartson wants an enabling statute. Here's the enabling statute. Department of Revenue, any agency, may promulgate rules it believes are necessary to effectuate the purpose of the statute. Necessary to effectuate the purpose of the statute. As Justice Bablish said earlier, what is the purpose of this statute? It's to implement use value assessments of farmland in Wisconsin. That's the purpose. Now, do we know
that a rule is not valid if it accepts the bounds of the correct interpretation, is the rest of the sentence.
Absolutely.
Which is what we're here about.
That's exactly right. I'm glad you focused on that language. I was getting there. That language says that the department can't exceed the correct bounds of interpretation. And the appellants here would have you believe that's exactly what the Department of Revenue did. And I would say that that's a pretty amazing contention, given the fact that every single entity or body in this case that has looked at the department's interpretation has sided with the Department of Revenue. The Farmland Advisory Council sides with the Department of Revenue. Obviously, the department believes that. Judge Pikowski, Judge LaRoque, arguably the legislature, when it permitted the rules to be promulgated through its chambers. We don't have anybody directly involved in this case other than the appellants that believe their interpretation. Everybody believes the department's interpretation.
Mr. Roying, how significant is it, in your opinion, that the Senate Committee and the Assembly Committee took no action contrary to the proposed rule 18.08 when each received 18.08?
I believe that's very significant. Now, in most cases, the fact that a rule passes through the chambers of our legislature in and of itself wouldn't be enough to say that the legislature agreed with the interpretation of a statute in a rule. But this is not the typical case. Let me run through a quick timeline to make my point here. On October 18, 1999, that's when the Farmland Advisory Council made its recommendation that we were talking about earlier. On November 30, 1999, the department promulgated the emergency rule. So a couple of weeks later, the Senate Rules Committee held a hearing on the department's authority. So the Senate knew about this. They wanted to look at it. They held an open public hearing.
It wasn't the whole Senate, was it?
No, it's just a Senate Rules Committee, and I don't believe it was the entire Rules Committee either, but there was a committee, open public committee hearing. On January 31st, another Senate committee the Senate Committee on Organization was asked by Senator Kuala to fund a lawsuit, to use Senate funds, to use the committee funds to pay for the Boardman firm to either represent the Senate or other plaintiffs dealing with this lawsuit. So we have another committee that's interested enough to use Senate dollars to pay for a law firm to advise it. And a month later, the Malice filed their suit, represented by the Boardman firm. Now, in the meantime, when all that was going on, the Department of Revenue was promulgating the permanent rule that was going to replace the emergency rule, which by its terms, every emergency rule expires. So on May 8th, it was delivered to the two committees that you referred to, and on, it was referred to the leaders of the Senate and Assembly, and on the 17th and the 22nd of May, it was assigned to those two committees. Neither committee objected.
Is it two committees or to the Joint Committee on the Review of a
Two different committees. You go
to
one committee in
each.
Yeah, you go to one committee in each House. It went to the Senate Committee on Economic Development, Housing, and Government Operations, and the Assembly Ways and Means Committee. Neither committee objects to this rule. Now, neither committee objects to this rule in a context where other Senate committees are paying for a lawsuit against this very rule.
What does that tell you?
What that tells me is that this is not a typical case. What that tells me is that the legislature knew full well what was going on in this lawsuit. It tells me that if anybody in the legislature thought that the department was doing anything wrong, they would have, and I say should have, done something at that point.
What's the procedural rule? I guess it has changed since I was there, but if the Joint Committee for the Review of Administrative Rules did nothing, the legislature still had the opportunity to do something. What's the rule now? What's the process?
The process is this. The agency goes through its process with hearings and so forth. Then it assigns it to the leader of the Senate and the Assembly. Those two leaders are instructed to assign the rule to a committee, and that those two committees have an opportunity to object at that point.
If they don't object, it never gets to the Joint Committee,
right?
Isn't that right?
That's exactly right.
Counsel, if our challenge here today is to discern the intent of the legislature when it enacted 70.32-2R. And what year was that? When did this pass?
1995.
And so if that's my challenge, to discern the intent, and since 1995 some of the people quit, some died, there's some new people here, what difference does it make whether or not leadership did anything on May 8th when something was delivered to them, or whether the Committee on Ways and Means wanted it or didn't want it, or someone started a lawsuit? I mean, it seems to me that in 1999, that does not inform me as to what the answer should be to what was the intent of the 1995 legislature when they have passed 70.32-2R. So what does all this mean?
I agree with you that in and of itself, the fact that this rule went through the legislature without objection would not be enough in any case. I don't care what the circumstances are. We are dealing with a subsequent legislature. It's not the same legislature that enacted the statute. But this court has held in the past that legislative action in a subsequent legislature can be instructed to this court. I'm not telling you that you have to believe what the legislature, what I'm saying the legislature believed at that point, or even that it has to control your decision, but I think that when taken together with all the rest of the facts of this case, it is instructed to this court that the legislature never objected to what the Department of Revenue did. Now, I want to touch on something you were asking earlier, Justice Bradley, about where in 7303-49 the power was given to the Farmland Advisory Council. I believe that the rules, the words of the statute say that the Farmland Advisory Council was to recommend rules to implement use value assessment of farmland. Now, why is that so important? That's important because it doesn't say rules to start the phase-in or rules to set use values. Those are in other places of the statute. This is a broad policy directive, especially when considered in conjunction with the other broad policy objectives. They're also supposed to recommend on rules to reduce urban sprawl. They're also supposed to recommend to the legislature an appropriate penalty for converting uses away from ag use.
Well,
why
Rowing,
again? To curb urban sprawl.
Well, Mr. Rowing, that's right. They can make recommendations to the legislature that contravene the statute or go way beyond the statute. But clearly, the Department of Revenue cannot implement any recommendation that violates the statute.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But I believe the Department of Revenue believed, especially given the fact that this legislatively created Farmland Advisory Council that was given these broad policy directives, tells the Department of Revenue that in order to effectuate the purpose of the statute, you need to go to full use value, that faced with that, that gives them the power in 227.11 to promulgate the rule. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Mr. Bartson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me just touch briefly on the inaction of the legislature and why I think that that is an inappropriate analysis that the Circuit Court adopted. As Justice Bradley has already pointed out, it's the wrong legislature, and subsequent legislatures cannot determine the legislative intent of a former legislature. More, it's not the action of the legislature. It was the inaction of two committees, perhaps only two legislators. I don't know that. There is nothing in the record about what thought process these two committees went through, but we're talking about the inaction of perhaps only a handful of the legislature. But I think the most important thing that I want to touch on is that this logic undermines this court's function. In Chapter 227, this court and all the courts that Your Honor supervise, this court is allocated the duty under 227.40 to entertain declaratory judgment actions and ask whether a rule complies with a statute. This is the function of this court, and circumventing it by saying that it passed the legislature, I think it would be an invasion of this court's proper function. The promulgation of the rules in 1997 eliminated much of the uncertainty about timing. When the statute was enacted, I think it's clear to everybody that it wasn't clear at what time something was going to happen, because it was dependent on the promulgation of rules, particularly 1807, that informed assessors how to assess land in this new way. So I really want to focus on the plain language of the statute, because I respectfully submit that my opponent has flipped things around. Text is essential in construing statutes. Where does the recommendation and rules fall in the text? For each year beginning with 1998 or upon completion of the Advisory Council's recommendation and promulgation rules, and ending no later than. Beginning with A or B and ending no later than C. I should say X, Y, and Z because we have A, B, and C in the statute. Beginning with X or Y and ending no later than Z. I believe that's the only way that you can, with proper adherence to text, read that statute. The other important fact then is we already began. Why are we talking about the Farmland Advisory Council's recommendation and the promulgation of rules in 2000 when we already began in 1998? We know that we began in 1998. So to read the statute correctly, for each year beginning in 1998 and ending no later than December 31, 2008, that's what I believe is the correct interpretation of the statute.
The assessed value shall.
Shall. That's the next important point. Shall be reduced as follows. Where does the conflict come in? Because the reduction in assessed value from the rule is different than it would be if it was done according to the statute. And the statute says shall be. Not shall unless a different rule, not anything but shall be as follows.
What's the significance of the non-statutory provision 9148 that Mr. Hildebrand made reference to that says on or before May 196, the department shall submit to the Legislative Council, and that's the standard rulemaking process that will define agricultural use, designate categories, include guidelines to be used by property tax assessors. What's the significance of that?
I think it is part and parcel of what the process was here. That is precisely what the department was doing. I don't know whether they met that statutory deadline or that non-statutory deadline, but clearly, when the statute was enacted, a role was assigned to the department that, as determined by rule, is a huge role. And that is what the department was doing both in the budget bill's non-statutory sections and in the promulgation of the rules. It was a process that took time, was complicated, and was completed in 1997. So I don't think there's any significance to it.
Well, if they were going to do all these rules and there's a five-year average capitalization rate, et cetera, do they need these if you've got a 10-year, nine-year or eight-year phase-in?
Certainly. You have to define agricultural land, for example. I think the phase-in would not operate at all without the rules. Not at all. It couldn't be done. And that's why the promulgation of rules is in there. I'm sorry.
You may just quickly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bartson. Thank you, Mr. Hildebrand. Thank you, Mr. Roang, for an excellent argument on a difficult case. Thank you. We put in recess until Tuesday at 9:45. That ends the hearing on 003250.